Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It's Wednesday, so we're a little bit out of schedule per normal ritual and tradition here, but we're being joined today by Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com, of course, on social media at JUMOSQ. Justice, while we're off schedule a little bit, it's great to be chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, man, I'm doing great. We're going to have to get interesting filling out these episodes up until what, like late July when Packers training camp starts again, so...
Justice, this is my superpower, my friend, is figuring out things to talk about 365 days a year. Fret not. I've always got something in the hopper that we can chat about no matter what. So you don't worry about that. I got you covered, my friend. Obviously, we had the opportunity to kind of finalize the draft, open up these presents a little bit, and kind of get through everything. We had a, you know, sort of immediate post-draft reaction show. We did the Q&A right after as well. But we've had the opportunity now to kind of let the dust settle a little bit, as well as kind of just go through some of the draft classes in general. And then, of course, kind of watch the tape a little bit more of some of these players. So as we kind of have had this opportunity now, is there anything that you're feeling different about? Any players that you feel better, worse? How are you feeling now that we've let the dust settle a little bit?
No, because the first six players I'd already seen when we talked last time. I watched the last three. Interesting guys, all have a shot to make the roster. But I think that is more, I don't think they're roster locks. I think the first six are roster locks, or the first five are roster locks is kind of how I think about it.
Sure.
The defensive tackle room, I really do see it as, you know, hey, we got two UGA guys and they're going to compete. And one of them is probably going to be nose tackle too. I also don't think that them being drafted or I guess Brinson being drafted necessarily means that that's going to preclude the team from looking on the waiver wire or anything like that. I don't see him as like that level of a talent.
Sure.
The cornerback, Michael Robinson, watched him. His RAS chart is exactly what shows up on the field, man. When he's triggering downhill, you know, he's a willing tackler and he looks very quick. Anytime you ask him to do a double move or, you know, do a baseball turn or anything like that, the fact, you know, his poor agility scores really do show up. I think they drafted him probably to be a, you know, cover two type of corner. I know a lot of people look at, you know, there were a lot of conversations about Halfley when he came in, right? Because he played so much cover one in the college level. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that you're playing the option so much. So you can't really play zone in the same ways, right? Because you're dealing with RPO, you're dealing with, you know, true read option, stuff like that, you know, basically like a millennial version, or I guess a zoomer version at this point of like the triple option where, you know, you're doing the read option, but then there's, you know, a screen RPO or something like that on the perimeter. I really do think that this team wants to be a cover two, cover three team, you know, in its base. And everything comes down to, you know, the pass rush. And if the pass rush isn't getting home, they're going to change, you know, the picture on the back end, right? And they're going to run, you know, cover six or cover eight sometimes, which is, you know, quarter, half. They're going to do stuff like the inverted two, right? But I think Robinson, I think is like at this point in his career, his only chance on defense is if he's a cover two guy. You want him playing in the low hole. You want him fitting the run. You want him triggering going downhill because it doesn't look good when anytime he has to cover any of these longer type of routes and, you know, cover a crosser or a double move, you'd think that a faster guy would be able to do that a little bit better, but his limited wiggle definitely shows up on film. Exactly. And then John Williams, again, I think he's just like a fairly consistent guy who, you know, they seem really excited about him playing multiple positions and stuff. He only played one on film. But yeah, I think he's just going to be a back end of the roster guy who's going to compete with, you know, Tel Ford and Travis Glover and all those other guys. So yeah, I think there's probably one or two, depending on what you think of Jacob Monk, roster spots that are open on the offensive line position going into, you know, training camp. And I figure he's going to be one of the guys to compete there. Whether he makes the 53 or not, I can't tell you. I wouldn't be shocked if any of these three guys or all three guys, you know, at the end of the draft were cut. I just don't see them as like this. I don't really see them as like these huge value picks or like hidden gems or anything like that. Like when I didn't watch Carrington Valentine coming into the draft. Right. But then after he was picked by the Packers, I was like, this guy shouldn't have been around. Like clearly.
Right.
He was not a priority watch for a lot of these DB coaches because he would have gotten a lot higher.
That was Mel Kiper's Shedeur Sanders before Shedeur Sanders. Do you remember that? That was Mel Kiper's guy since like round three. Like he kept like round three or round four. I forget which one it was, but like he was the top guy on Mel's board. And it wasn't obviously to the extent of Shedeur Sanders, anything near it, but he kept being the top guy on Mel's board from like for like the final four rounds of the draft until Green Bay finally took him.
Yeah. I mean, he looked like that caliber of a talent. When I watched him on film, and I was like, I just can't believe this guy went in the seventh. I didn't get that feeling from either the seventh round picks or the sixth round pick. I think the Packers are in a bad position if these guys have to see the field. And unfortunately, Brinson might be a guy who has to see the field immediately because they don't have very many nose tackle type of bodies. I mean, again, we talked about this before, but when either Sladen or Clark were banged up, nose tackle two on the team ended up being Carl Brooks. And Carl Brooks is a guy, you know, a lot of Packers fans last offseason were like, why doesn't he play some defensive end? So,
yeah,
wide range of outcomes for that guy. I will say, you know, if Brooks, it's kind of an interesting situation, right? Because Brooks can play nose tackle in a pinch, I guess. He's going to have to play a whole lot more of it if he's, you know, nose tackle too. Because I don't think you want to kick Devontae Wyatt in there.
No. I don't know that I want Brooks either, or Wooden, or any, like any of those guys. I don't like.
Yeah. See, that's my whole thing is like, I was hoping, and I've wrote a whole article about this, about, you know, why the Packers didn't address defensive tackle in the first 2 days of the draft, really. And the truth of the matter is, one, there were a lot of under tackles. And once you make the decision to pay Devontae Wyatt, you're kind of out of the under tackle market, at least in terms of what you perceive as, you know, your long-term guy, or at least in the next 2 years. Right. And as far as nose tackles went, those guys all got overdrafted by a lot. Like there were guys who were, you know, what's his name? Broughton, the kid out of Texas, who was like 170 something on the consensus board. He ends up going top 100. Jamari Caldwell goes a lot earlier than people think. Tyleek Williams went in the first round. The other kid from Texas, Collins, right? He ends up going pretty early.
Yep.
Like all the nose tackles came off the board quick. So I get the Packers sitting back, but now you kind of deal with the ramifications of that a little bit. So yeah, nose tackle is going to be an area of concern for me moving forward. Cornerback, it's just a whole lot of competition. I don't think there's a leader, and then offensive line is the same thing. And that's kind of how I viewed the last three picks of the draft.
I'm excited to talk about each of these because there's one I disagree with, and I think the other ones that we're in lockstep on. Let's start with the least interesting, I think. So just from a offensive line standpoint, it feels like to me you have your top seven, your five, you know, starters, basically kind of carryover guys. And then of course, Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton as kind of the two that are trying to crack that starting lineup. You have those seven. Then it feels like there's a group of five that are probably competing for three spots. Monk, Telfort, Glover, the holdovers from last year, Donovan Jennings, potentially, and then, of course, John Williams. It feels like there's three spots and five guys kind of competing for it. Maybe one of the other, five guys? They've got 17 offensive linemen on their roster right now, so maybe one of the other five steps up in some capacity, but it feels like, to me, five guys fighting for three spots.
I agree with you. The only hesitation I have is I'm always putting 10 offensive linemen on the 53-man roster, and they always end up with like nine. So I always overestimate on the offensive line just because I'm like, just do it. You can't have enough of them. By midseason, you're going to need them. But yeah, I agree with you. The only other thing too is the Jacob Monk of it all, right? And how you perceive that, because I know I liked him coming out. And I thought he got a solid summer, honestly, when I watched the preseason film and stuff. But whatever happened during the practice, during the season, you know, Kadeem Telfort and Travis Glover ended up passing him on, just in terms of the pecking order, not necessarily like, you know,
I wonder,
those guys aren't going to take snaps at center.
I wonder how much of this was the change in run game through the course of the season, where they decided to do a little bit more of the Josh Jacobs stuff, obviously, and just felt like, hey, if we need to go with somebody, we'd rather have Telfort or Glover come in with a little bit more size rather than Jacob Monk, who's kind of in that Lucas Patrick sort of frame where he's not obviously going to be moving some people. I wonder how much that played a part in that.
For sure. And, you know, that's an interesting thing about John Williams too, right? It's that John Williams isn't really, like, we talk about this transition of the Packers offensive line to be more of a road grading type of team and stuff like that. John Williams is very much in the mold of like old Packers offensive line selections, where it's, you know, versatility, a tackle who's probably going to kick in at the next level, all that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what direction they go. I thought Telfort was a good bit better than Travis Glover last season.
Agreed.
I would, if it were my choice, Travis Glover is the fifth of those five options, but we'll see what the team actually decides.
Yeah, he's going to need to, let's just say, go through some improvements and hopefully gain a little bit of seasoning over the offseason from where he was. I was so, well, he was the first guy up in the playoff game, right? They had him in over Telfort. And then,
he got pulled out, after the three penalties. And the penalties aren't even like, he's just a very raw player to me. I think he can lose very early on in the down. And that is, you know, great way to kill some plays and kill some drives.
Let's talk about the next one, the corner. To me, this is just a quote that I wanted to bring up because it's one of my favorite quotes. So this is per Mike Zimmer, quote, "You can find a cover two corner anywhere. I can go down to the 7-Eleven in Bloomington and get one." That's a classic Mike Zimmer quote. So there is a piece of this that's intriguing to me, though, because if Green Bay does want to be this sort of cover two, you know, just kind of zone defense team, they have, depending on what happens with the Jaire Alexander situation, they have not put a ton of resources into the draft as of late at corner, to say the least. Is this something that they are now feeling like it's just the value's not there? They can find guys like this, or is this just happenstance, circumstance? How do you want to view it?
No, I think it's a lot more circumstance. I mean, the draft stuff makes a lot more sense once you're like, yeah, well, they got Keyshawn for nothing and they got Russell Douglas for nothing, right? It's not, I mean, they pay Jaire. They're willing to play, you know, top market money for a cornerback. In the slot, when Keyshawn was paid, he was a top five paid nickel, right? The nickel cornerback market has drastically changed since then. He was paid, what, $6 million a year last offseason. Since then, this offseason alone, there's been four guys who have made over $10 million per year, and one of them is Nate Hobbs. I mean, if anything, it's just like, you know, they used to let like guys like Micah Hyde just walk because they're like, yeah, we just don't value the slot position. If anything, I'm just like, oh, they value the slot position now, right? I mean, they drafted Bullard. Bullard, you wanted him to be a safety ideally, but they were cool with playing him in the slot. And then, you know, Nate Hobbs, who's kind of a combo inside-outside guy. So, no, I don't view it as them not valuing cornerback. Again, like we talked about this with wide receiver, right? Where I mentioned, I think on one of your live streams, like the Packers really wanted Chris Olave that the year he was drafted. If Lucas Van Ness had not been there, they would have taken Zay Flowers. I know that for a fact, right?
Sure.
You know, we do a whole lot of perceiving on just like the guys that they actually turn in draft picks for, but you don't get a look at the full board. I think if, you know, if Golden would have been gone and they took Harrison, I wouldn't have been shocked at all. Like, that's just kind of what they are. I do think it was weird. If there's anything to criticize this draft about, the more I went through it and looked at, you know, which edge rushers were available, which defensive tackles were available, which cornerbacks were available, you know, the positions that fans seem to have wanted the team to address a little bit earlier. The one pick that didn't make sense to me, or that I guess I would have stood on the table and been like, yo, we got to go draft this guy, would have been Amos in the second round. You know, I thought, you know, he would have been a guy that they would have taken over Belton, but I don't hate the Belton pick either. So I just, you know, I thought Amos kind of fit what they needed a little bit more. And he was another guy, you know, tremendous ball skills, more of his own corner than a man corner, all that stuff. So yeah, I don't think they're devaluing the cornerback position. I think they want to get good there. I just think, you know, the Keyshawn deal, again, extremely valuable, a $6 million veteran starting cornerback. That's pretty unheard of at the NFL level. They spend money on Hobbs. You know, we'll see what happens with Jair. I mean, Carrington Valentine, again, is a guy who we mentioned, like, they took him in the seventh round. But if he would have been available in this draft, even at his age right now, I think he's only like 23, 24, something like that, he probably would have been a late second round pick, early third round pick, right? And that's a guy that they're going to have sitting on the bench right now if Jair comes back. Because sure, Hobbs is going to play the slot and Keyshawn's going to play outside. So I don't see it as them devaluing the position at all.
Totally fair. If you had to sort of, as we sit here on what, May 6th, if you had to handicap the battle between, say, Micah Robinson, Kamal Haddon, and Kalen King, do you have preference, or just whoever plays better in camp?
Whoever plays better in camp. I mean, Haddon, I would say, would be my leader right now just because he's shown special teams ability. And again, I don't want that to be overlooked. Like the Packers lost Carrington Valentine and Robert Rochelle in free agency. And that's a lot of special team snaps. And I don't think that you want to do that with Carrington, to be totally honest. So, you know, you can make up some of that stuff with, you know, having all these receivers, you know, all the safeties, all that. Maybe you roster another linebacker instead of keeping six cornerbacks. So you only carry four, or you only carry five. But I think that fifth guy has to play teams, and Haddon is a guy who's kind of done it. So I think I'd handicap him, the rookie, and then probably King. I know King is the apple of everyone's eyes. You can't get people to stop talking about King, but King was not a priority for this team last year.
327 special team snaps combined between Valentine and Rochelle this past season. So that's a lot. It's not nothing. So definitely something that they're going to have to replace with those corners. And we'll see Haddon, King, Micah Robinson, who's potentially up for that battle. All right, the last one, the one that, again, maybe we don't see 100% eye to eye. I was really impressed with Brinson, just in the tape that I had the opportunity to go back and watch through really his entirety of his career. I thought he was a little bit undervalued. I was kind of stunned when I first watched him, just at a first glance before we did kind of the recap. I'm like, yeah, he's just a guy or whatever. Then the more I watched him, the more I thought he could actually anchor better than I thought, hold up against double teams. It wasn't consistent per se, but it definitely showed on tape.
That's the biggest thing that I struggle with. Is I'm like,
fair enough.
You're supposed to be NT2 and buddy, I need you to hang on to these double teams a little bit longer, because there's sometimes like the Alabama game where Proctor, who, and maybe that's unfair because Proctor was, you know, five-star recruit, dicked around with Alabama and Iowa for a long time, and bounced between the teams. He's probably going to be a first round pick next year, but you just see him get caved in on, you know, a down block or a double team or something. I'm just like, all right, we'll see. By the end of the summer, we'll see how much you develop, bud.
Yeah, that's fair. The consistency was definitely a little bit concerning. And obviously he was not asked to play a ton of snaps at Georgia. He had the opportunity to kind of rotate in with all those amazing players at Georgia. But I don't know. I was a little bit higher. I think I'm a little bit more excited about him after I went back and watched him a little bit more. But we'll see. It's not, again, and I talked about this when I did the Brinson breakdown. I just did an episode of the biggest questions remaining this offseason. And to me, the depth behind Kenny is still, to me, right up there with the biggest questions, where if Kenny takes another step back, I don't think that's going to be the case, but if he takes another step back and or is injured for any significant period of time, they're definitely in no man's land. And there's not anybody out there. Like, good luck finding any sort of nose tackle right now in the free agent market. It's ugly.
Yeah. Again, maybe something pops up at cutdowns, but I think we've talked about this before where it's like, dog, if Kenny goes down and he's out for any significant amount of time, we're losing a draft pick because we're trading for someone.
Yeah.
It's not a great situation to be in.
It is one of the, of all the things that caught me off guard this offseason, I will say I've been very caught off guard by how important teams valued nose tackles and just defensive tackles in general, because you look at like somebody like Dalvin Tomlinson, the contract that he got in Arizona, I was not expecting him to get like that much money. And I also like, I was pretty bold in stating that I didn't think the defensive tackle market in free agency was going to have much value, because I thought every team was going to wait for this entire draft class and be like, oh, there's all these amazing draft defensive tackles, like in amazing prospects. Let's see if we get those first. And then if we don't, we'll go free agent shopping for the remainder of the market after that. No, these guys flew off the market in free agency. There was nobody left prior to the draft. And then they went way earlier than expected in the draft, despite it being super deep. And it was like, all of a sudden you get to the sixth round and it's like, again, you're left with Brinson and a couple other guys. And we'll see if it works out. You get a Stackhouse in UDFA. But yeah, just really crazy. I did not expect that at all. Hey friends, Andy Herman here. Now that the draft is over, there's plenty of time to focus in on the basketball playoffs, hockey playoffs, and of course, the heart of the baseball regular season. And you know what else it means? It means it's time to add your favorite players from the diamond into your Prize Picks lineup. Whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs, take your pick on more or less to get your shot to win up to 1,000 times your cash today. Right now, you can sign up for Prize Picks and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's absolutely guaranteed. So do you think Aaron Judge is going to hit another home run this week? Or how about Juan Soto with more than one hit in his next game? Cook up your hot takes with your friends and win real money when you run your game on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Christian Yelich to finally get hot for Milwaukee, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on options for Aaron Judge as well, because he is out of his mind right now. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app, using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly on your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game.
Yeah, I think the corner market and the defensive tackle market were definitely the ones that shocked people the most in terms of just like where these guys actually went in the draft. You know, it led to wide receivers falling down a little bit, edge rushers falling down a little bit, and hopefully the Packers did a good job in the mid rounds, right? Capturing Savion Williams and the two edge rushers that they got. So that's my hope. I do like all those picks. Again, I the only one I'm that really pops up in my mind, you know, in terms of a second guessing, is the second round pick and not taking Amos. But you know, outside of that, I can't really complain with this draft. I don't have any guys. I don't know about you. I don't really have any guys that I would have rather liked in like the sixth or seventh or anything like that. So
there was nothing I was losing any sleep over. Actually, let's just do this right now, because I think this is a fun one. There were the two trades, and we may have touched base on this briefly, but obviously, again, it's after the dust settles a little bit more, it's kind of fun to look back at. There were the two trades that right after Green Bay happened at pick 23. The one, of course, was the Giants. They get 2 third round picks. I forget who moved down with them, but whoever it was got 2 third round picks.
I think it was the Rams.
Rams got the first from the Falcons, right?
That's what it was. Rams moved out after the Dart trade because people thought that the Rams wanted Dart. Yeah, you're right. Correct.
I forget who the team that moved back in with the other deal. Doesn't matter. They got a third round pick this year and a third round pick next year to move back, I want to say 10, 12-ish spots in that situation to get into the early second round. And then, the one that happened a little bit later was you moved to pick 46 in the second round. You give up a late third rounder this year. In this case, it would have been basically like Green Bay's fourth rounder this year. It would have been pretty equivalent. And then you picked up a seventh rounder this year, but you picked up the Falcons' first rounder next year. Benefit of hindsight, and again, we don't even know if these deals were offered to Green Bay, if they knew they existed or not. It seems like there were some deals out there, because Goody said there were opportunities to trade down in round one. Then he didn't have the opportunity to trade down in rounds two or three. So I'm assuming that these were probably the teams that were calling him with similar offers. Would either of those been enticing to you in hindsight?
Getting the Falcons' first round pick. For sure. That's the one where I'm like, I mean, I just think that's a horrendous deal. I mean, you look at what the math works out at, like in terms of any of like the advanced numbers, not like the Jimmy Johnson trade chart. I don't think anyone really looks at that credibly anymore. I mean, correct. Maybe you do it to turn it into content, but I don't think anyone is like, this is the correct way to value draft picks. The Falcons would basically need to win the Super Bowl next year for that trade to break even. I don't think the Falcons are anywhere close to that, man.
Nope.
So I, yeah, give me the Falcons first round pick. Like that might be a top 10 selection. I don't think that's a playoff team. So yeah, I would have done that. The Giants trade, I probably wouldn't have, just because I thought Golden was the best player on the board, man. And you know, in a mock draft scenario, you're cool with trading back and stuff like that, because you thought maybe all of, you know, Walter Nolan, Kenneth Grant, Derek Harmon would have been available at 23. You can move back a little bit and still grab one of them. None of them were available when the Packers were up there in the draft. So I was cool with them turning in the pick for Matthew Golden. If I would have known the Falcons trade was out there, I probably would be a little pissed that we didn't do that. But
all right, so let's game this out a little bit, because this is fun, right? So they draft Matthew Golden in the first. Let's just say it would have been straight up for the fourth round pick instead of the third. It's a little bit different, but you're trading the 23rd instead of the 25th, yada, yada. They don't get the seventh rounder in return because of that. So you're basically trading Matthew Golden, and in this case, Baron Sorrell, who is your fourth round pick. So again, we don't know how this would butterfly effect, but just for fun, Matthew Golden and Baron Sorrell for pick 46 and a first rounder next year. We don't know obviously what the first rounder is going to be, but here's just an idea of what was available at pick 46. Terrence Ferguson, the tight end, went at 46. Will Johnson, the corner, went to the Cardinals at 47. Ursary, the offensive tackle, went to the Texans. Demetrius Knight, the linebacker, to the Bengals. Elijah Arroyo, tight end. Nick Scorton, defensive end. The UCLA defensive end goes 52 to the Titans. And then just Ben Morrison. And then, of course, you get to Anthony Belton. So anyone that would have been on the clock there, Green Bay would have taken anyway, obviously. So if you wanted a wide receiver, the next two to go would have been Trey Harris and Jack Besh. Trey Harris went 55 to the Chargers, Jack Besh 58 to the Raiders. So again, benefit of hindsight, just gaming this out for the sake of just kicks and giggles, nothing more. You trade Matthew Golden and Baron Sorrell. You get next year's first round pick. Who are you taking at 46 in this scenario?
So, I mean, I would have taken Amos.
There you go. That's a fair, yeah, too. Or I guess you could take Belton and then Amos or in that situation, I guess. But
The way that the Packers talk about it is really interesting, though, because they basically said, you know, we waved goodbye to Savion Williams when we turned in that pick for Anthony Belton. So I think that there's a scenario if they take that Falcons trade, they still end up with Belton and Savion Williams. They just end up drafting Savion Williams a little bit earlier, right?
And then, and then maybe take Sorrell in the third. So,
again, in that scenario, only thing I'm complaining about is like, why didn't we take Amos? Right. So,
yeah.
Again, I see a lot of value in that Falcons future first round pick.
It would be pretty interesting if you end up with the exact same draft, just no Matthew Golden and then a first round pick next year in return. That's a really interesting dynamic if it would have ended that way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a really interesting way to look at it, where it's like, okay, would you trade Matthew Golden for a top 10 pick next year?
Oh, the potential for it, for sure.
Potential for it. I don't know, man. I've seen Michael Penix play football. People got really excited about Michael Penix for reasons I don't really understand. He didn't play that well. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
This is the one, Andy.
We talked a whole lot about edge rushers this offseason.
And we talked a lot about how awful Atlanta's front was going into this offseason as well.
There were two guys I was like, look, they're going to go high in the draft. I have no idea how long you can keep them at edge on a down-to-down basis, because they cannot play the edge very well. And it's the two guys that the Falcons drafted in the first round. So,
yeah,
buddy, if you're playing the Falcons, it's student body left, student body right. Ollie, not a great situation, I don't think. I wouldn't have done those trades if I were in the Falcons situation.
No, that was one of my least favorite drafts of anyone, in large part because of giving up the future first. But they needed help up front. We'll see if it works. They certainly got a couple pass rushers, but I'm not super keen on where Atlanta is headed right now with those picks. I digress. Let's kind of go back to Green Bay for a moment. Any of the UDFAs stand out to you at all?
Yeah, same guys. Stackhouse, you know, I think he's going to be in competition for that nose tackle, backup nose tackle position. He's done it before. I don't really see a big gap between him and Brinson. I know, you know, depending on whose rankings you look at, like one guy might be ahead, one might got would have been ahead pre-draft, one guy might have been behind, but it flips pretty consistently from evaluator to evaluator. And then Dumas Johnson, I guess he dropped the hyphen, right? It's just,
yeah, just Johnson now.
Just Johnson now. The linebacker out of Kentucky, he was a former UGA guy, got banged up at the end of his Bulldogs career, ended up transferring to Kentucky for his final season. I think it just makes a lot of sense in terms of adding competition to that room, in terms of just like being a relevant UDFA. The Packers now have, I believe, 6 off-ball linebackers on their roster. The Packers
7, talk- I think.
Is it 7 now? Okay.
With Isaiah Simmons and yes. Christian Welch and Johnson. And Hopper.
Got it.
And Hopper, got it. Yep.
I was trying to think.
You just written Hopper off the roster altogether already. He's just, he's so far in the back of your mind. He's just gone already.
We'll see what he does this. We'll see what he does this summer. But yeah, I think he compete with, you know, Welsh and Isaiah Simmons for potentially, you know, the last spot or the probably more likely 2 spots on the depth chart there, because Goody didn't seem happy that the team only rostered, 5 guys going into 2024. I thought it was weird that they only rostered 5 guys when they were going to play a 4-3 defense, especially the way that they play special teams. It's going to be interesting to see some of this roster management stuff, because, you know, we talked about Colin Oliver, the kid out of Oklahoma State. I know they're saying, you know, maybe he could play some linebacker. I think it's, you know, base linebacker only. He's never going to play nickel linebacker, all that stuff. It takes a commitment, right? From an organizational standpoint, between the coaching staff and the front office, to just basically say, like, he doesn't count. Like, as a D end, he doesn't count because you can't treat him like a D end. As a linebacker, he doesn't count because you can't treat him like a full time linebacker. So you got to cover your butt. You got to cover your butt on both positions still, even though you're keeping Oliver. But he's going to give you a lot of pass rush. And, you know, you do the risk versus reward of how that messes with your roster numbers and stuff. So I think that they're probably going to have to carry more players at the linebacker position, even without counting Oliver towards that linebacker spot, which is going to be interesting, right? Does that mean you only keep 5 corners? Probably, but there's probably not a 6 corner that you want to keep on this team.
No, I know.
Does that mean you only keep 9 offensive linemen? Okay, you've kind of been doing that recently. 3 running backs. How many wide receivers are you going to keep, right? I think all this stuff kind of works hand in hand. It'll be interesting to see kind of how it works out, you know, toward the end of the summer at least.
You want to hear my galaxy brain idea already at wide receiver?
Cut Romeo.
No, we're not quite there yet. That's a different galaxy. If you could trade Romeo, we can maybe have a conversation. But no, my galaxy brain is just, if you like Bo Melton, if you like Malik Heath, if you like Mecole Hardman, just cut all 3 of them. You're going to get at least 1 of them back in the practice squad, probably 2.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you don't, if you have 3 of them, I can promise everyone, 3 receivers from Green Bay are not getting claimed at cutdown time from the Green Bay Packers. You will at least, at minimum, get 1 of them back, probably 2, maybe all 3. So it's almost like one of those things where you have so many that you feel comfortable with. And even if you lost all 3, some crazy thing happened, you lost all 3. Green Bay's probably not losing any sleep over it. They've got 5 talented wide receivers as is, and Watson's going to come back at some point. They probably don't even lose in 1 second of sleep over it. So I think they could easily move on from all 3 of those guys and then just get probably all 3 of them back on the practice squad if they wanted.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Romeo thing, I don't think it's 0. So Romeo
trader cut. You don't think there's any value, 0 value.
There could be. I mean, medicals is a big question.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, that's the issue there. So Romeo Doubs, let me pull up his contract right now so I'm not talking out of my ass. He received
the 3-point. Yeah.
Yeah, he received the PPP increase. So what, or PPE increase. So basically what happened is he has been on the field enough that he got that last season of rookie deal salary increase. So last year he was making $985,000. This year he's making 3.4 $4 million. So his base salary has increased more than three times, almost four times this year. The Packers are going to be up against it salary cap wise. And if they don't think Dobbs is going to be a starter, kind of hard to justify that $3.4 million that he's going to end up making. So I don't know if you go to him and you ask for a restructure, because this money is non-guaranteed, right? We saw this with Royce Newman last year, where they were like, we're dropping that number before you even make the 53, right? Like, you're not going to make the team on this number. Do you want to make the team? If you want to make the team, we got to work it down from here. So I think the Dobbs situation is interesting, because it's not just about – here's something that gets missed with all the Jair discourse, because people are like, well, the salary cap doesn't even really get changed if you cut Jair. So why would you cut Jair? It's not about the salary cap, man. It's all about cash. In today's NFL, everything is about cash, because of the way you can manipulate just how basically like the accounting works on this stuff. So the question is, do you want to keep Romeo Dobbs on your team for $3.4 million? Because that's $3.4 million that you then don't roll over to next season. Now, obviously, someone's going to replace his spot, right? So it's probably closer to like $2.5 million. But that's the question is, okay, do we want to roll over that $2.5 million so that we can use it next year when we're over the cap and we have to start making decisions on not just Jair Alexander, not just Kenny Clark, but also like Elgton Jenkins. And like, which one of these guys do we want to re-sign who are going to be outgoing free agents? Because there's so many guys who are going to be free agents for this team next year. I don't think it's even likely at this point. But I don't think the chance is 0%. I wouldn't put Dobbs as a roster lock at this point.
It's funny. I had a similar conversation when I just did the 53-man prediction. But I said I couldn't quite – I didn't think there was a 0% chance that he was traded. I don't think he's released. I don't think they get to that point with it. But if there's any value, I could see them potentially going over the trade thing. The one I said too is like I couldn't quite – I think it's a 99.999999% chance that Dontayvion Wicks is on the team, but I also couldn't say for certain if he just came in and had a god-awful camp, like not catching anything, not focused, whatever the case may be, I couldn't quite get to the, there's probably one multiverse out there somewhere where maybe Dontayvion Wicks ends up on the outs, but I think both of them are just going to end up on the team, but I couldn't quite get there 1,000%.
Dobbs is really interesting too, because you talk about the injury stuff. He wasn't reportedly at the first phase of the workouts that they had in person.
Was that a report or was that just Matt Schneidman not seeing him in the pictures?
I went through the pictures myself too.
Okay.
I did not see Romeo Dobbs in there either. I actually, who the heck was it? I think it was Deslin Alexander. I was trying to figure out who the heck he was for like 20 minutes. Cause I was like, who's this bald dude? I've never seen this bald dude around before. I did my own investigative, if you want to call that work, on the photos that they ended up taking for Packers.com. Romeo's interesting, man.
He is very interesting. Yeah. I think he's the one that's not talked about that is a very intriguing what's going to happen. I would still be willing to bet he's just on the team this year, but I'm with you. I don't think it's a complete 100% lock. What did you think of the Isaiah Simmons signing?
Makes sense. I have zero expectations for him as a defender. I know some people brought that up. That's not what this was for, man. This is a special teams guy. He got really good at it. He swung the Seahawks game. You can make a real, I think this is true. You can make a real case that, Cam Ward would have been a Giant if not for Isaiah Simmons last year, which I'm sure Giants fans aren't happy about. You lost a quarterback because of a special teamer.
But yeah, Jackson Dart.
Yeah, I guess. Sure. Why not? I just think he's going to be a special teams body behind, maybe he's a guy who can push Hopper for that linebacker four spot. He's actually played a lot more slot than people realize, which I guess shouldn't be a shock because he's a former safety, all that stuff.
Yep.
I don't think they're going to want to play him in the slot, but it's nice to have that in your toolbox and like a you know, we just talked about like how many corners are they actually going to keep on the roster, all this stuff. If you're putting like, oh crap, all hands on deck, we lost all our defenders, and Colin Oliver still has to be active. You know, the fact that Isaiah Simmons can get you at least out of a couple quarters, you know, live in game at the slot position probably helps a little bit too. So that's kind of where I see his value. Don't really think of him as a defender very much. He's just like a crazy athletic guy who's very big and can play special teams pretty well at this point. So yeah, keep him on. He's going to be a guy who jumps over the center and tries to block long snapper and tries to block stuff on the field goal team. So that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, he's a toy for Rich Bisaccia. That's also a break glass in case of emergency safety, a break glass in case of emergency corner, and a break glass in case of emergency linebacker. Like I'll take all of those. That might be able to do a little bit of QB spy stuff if you want him to, or things like that, but you probably don't want him in a ton of defense.
No, and I don't think they're going to ask him to. I don't think that's their plan for him.
Primary special teams guy for sure. You had wrote a little bit about Devontae Wyatt and Quay Walker, the fifth year options, and maybe there being a little bit of risk in the avenue that Green Bay took with both players.
I can't believe they didn't get extensions done on these guys. And I know nothing prevents them moving forward, but you at least reaffirmed Walker's asking price at this point, right? Which is one risk that you take. I thought both were going to come in around $15 million per year. And the logic for that was, for Wyatt, it's Tershawn Wharton. Tershawn Wharton, I believe, started like 12 NFL games, was 5 years into his NFL career, or 5 seasons into his NFL career, played for the Kansas City Chiefs for 5 years, hit free agency, signed with the Carolina Panthers, was sort of like a one-dimensional pass rush guy. Has pretty similar numbers to Devontae Wyatt in terms of like their rates and stuff like that. He signed 3 years, 45 point something million dollars. It basically turns out to 15 a year. Yep. So I'm not super shocked that Wyatt got his number. The thing I would push back on is like, why didn't Quay get hit with that number too? Because the linebacker market, again, big picture, the biggest picture you can paint in the world for the NFL, their money comes from television contracts. Television contracts are now synonymous with streaming. Smart TVs are now tracking streaming numbers better than they ever have before. And that includes, you know, YouTube TV, all that stuff. Streaming services are now seeing what television, the television industry saw a lot earlier, which was, hey, if we don't have the NFL games, a lot of people aren't subbing to our thing. So the fact that YouTube TV has NFL Sunday Ticket is a massive boon for them. The NFL in terms of ratings, it's going up, 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 right? You guys saw all the posts, you know, all the blasts from PR companies about the draft, you know, 2 weeks ago, right? Where they're like, most watched ever, day two, day three, through the roof. You know, we're gonna have 1 million people at the draft in Washington in 2 years, right? All that stuff. The NFL is going to opt out of its contract option in 2029 and get to market. They're going to go to streaming services, and the streaming services, which they got a lot of money between Apple, Amazon, all the they basically get to run the country at this point, right? They got that much money. They are going to pay out the ass to get the NFL, and the salary is going to increase a lot. Well, between now, current times, and 2029, right? The NFL salary cap is going up about $20 to $25 million per year. Andy, who was the last star free? I mean, I guess you could say Saquon, but outside of like Saquon, right? There's not a lot of guys who are like, you know, hey, no, this guy's an all pro coming off of a rookie deal. He's hitting free agency. It's not happening. So the market movement, you're not seeing. So your teams are getting a lot of money. They're paying all their stars. These stars aren't getting the increases that we're used to, because stars aren't hitting the free agent market, which is where the biggest gains come from. Yep. So what's happening is, clear starters who are non-Pro Bowlers are the guys who are sucking up most of the money in free agency. Those are the people who are receiving the biggest increases. So you see a Nick Bolton, who's an iffy linebacker, right?
Very much so.
Q rating in Kansas City is not great. He's getting $15 million a year. Sherwood, the kid from the Jets, who started for one season, Andy, and was not really talked about as a $10 million guy until, you know, you get like Peter Schrager and those guys reporting like 2 weeks before the draft and like surprising guy who might get a whole ton of money, you know, Jermaine Sherwood, he ended up getting 15. If Quay hits the open market, he's getting 15. So I understand the whole argument of like, well, they're, you know, they're using edge rushers and part of the calculation for the linebacker position because it's all linebackers. It's also 3-4 linebackers, all this stuff.
Yep.
Walker's position is one that is like astronomically rising because those are the guys who are hitting, you know, NFL free agency, like I mentioned. It was an opportunity to get in front of the linebacker market, and I don't think they took it. But the Packers have done this before where they have taken those opportunities. Again, Keyshawn Nixon signed for $6 million per year. If Keyshawn hit the open market today, he's probably getting 12, 13.
At least, at least 12.
So, you know, that was an opportunity that, you know, we're talking about this 1 year later in terms of the extension, right? You saved 50% of the cash that you had to end up spending on Keyshawn. Now, I don't think Quay's going to bring in $30 million a year. I don't think it's going to be a 50% type of thing, right? But I do think that there's a scenario where, you know, both just the way that the market moves, like their asking price might be like $20 million for either Walker or Wyatt. And if you want to move on, right? But
well, we heard Goody, they don't want to move on. They want to keep
it. I mean, that's again, that is just why I'm like, why did we not just lock in prices? Because again, $20 to $25 million per year extra is what everyone's going to be able to play with from here on to 2029. And then in 2029, we're going to see some crazy stuff. I think we're going to get to some pretty crazy numbers in terms of the salary cap and all that. And you're already seeing a lot of teams betting on it. If you look at what the Philadelphia Eagles are doing and restructuring all their contracts and all that stuff, they're betting on 2029, a massive increase in the cap, because if not, they're not going to be able to carry a roster, right? I mean, they're going to be in a New Orleans Saints type of a situation for a good amount of time if they don't get that perceived jump. So
The only thing I can think of with Quay is twofold. Number one, just it being fully guaranteed. That was the one thing that they just really, they were fine with the 15 or whatever, but doing 15 on a 1 year fully guaranteed is
that's another big thing. Like even when you compare like the Tershawn Wharton deal and the Devontae Wyatt stuff, cause I kind of got into a little back and forth talking to people about this. The amount of guarantees Wyatt got is basically the amount of guarantees Wharton got, and Wharton got locked up for 3 years.
Yeah.
So again,
just do the long term.
Why didn't we get to a long-term extension? Like I was just expecting, I guess the way that they talked about it, and the way that these markets are moving, specifically at those two positions, I would have assumed we got to get an extension done. It didn't happen to either of them.
And then part two would be, I wonder if they were close on extensions or like near it, but couldn't quite get there. And the fifth year option came and they had to make the decisions on both. And with Wyatt's, they're like, we feel much more comfortable with giving the guaranteed at that number. With Quay, they didn't want to give the $15 million guaranteed. And I still wonder, I think Wyatt's a little bit less likely now to get done with the fifth year option. I think they let him play out the season. Also with Wyatt's age, it's a little bit interesting. We're like, you let him play out this year, you let him play out next year. If like next year he goes out and like all of a sudden tears it up, like all pro sort of season, you just franchise the dude. And then after that, he's 30. Like, you know, then you kind of make that decision, you know? So you kind of have the years of control that you want with Devontae right now, where you let him play out this year, let him play out next year and just see where he's at. And I'm kind of fine if he just kind of looks like the way he has been now over the last whatever, you just let him walk after that. Or if he's great, then you have some options still in your toolbox to kind of work with it. With Quay, I wonder if they were maybe close on it and they're still very hopeful of this, but felt like if they gave the 15 mil guaranteed, it was almost going to give Quay a little bit more, like if they was going to give his side more leverage on it. I don't know who would have more leverage in that situation, but I don't know. Hopefully they're just close and they get, because I could see where if they're thinking 15 mil per, if they could get a 3-year, $45 million extension done without as much guaranteed, they get that done next year, then it's less next year. And then the more of that money is in the future years where that cap does go up, you could still see it making sense that way rather than just 1 year, $15 million fully guaranteed.
Yeah, it was just not what I was expecting.
Yeah, so that's fair.
I'm still, I mean, it's not a huge deal. Like, it's not keeping me up at night or anything, but I'm still trying to like figure out what the plan was going in and what happened. I'm really interested in that. Because again, I did a lot of work on this, right? I mean, I looked for the player comparisons in terms of the contract. You know, when I saw a linebacker market going up and free agency, I was like, what does this mean for Quay? All that stuff. And it's really interesting because I don't think the Packers are going to want to use the cap space anyway, at least on free agents, because you're going to have so many guys on expiring contracts. You don't want to cancel out comp picks that could be a fourth round pick, right? So. Yeah.
Before fourth round picks, depending on who ultimately leaves in free agency. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. All right. Before I get you out of here, last thing, I did a episode yesterday, basically detailing my 12 biggest remaining questions on this team. I just want you to pick one of them that's intriguing to you. So whatever the special teams is going to be this upcoming season, Christian Watson's return from injury. One of the most under talked about things, Justice, I know he was injured a lot. Luke Musgrave last year, 7 catches, 45 yards, 0 touchdowns. Like 7 for 45 in 7 games played. That is a really weird season in hindsight. So Luke Musgrave, what Javon Bullard becomes or what he is, where he plays, etc. Offensive line alignment, LVN, drops, Kenny Clark depth, which we talked about already, where they get pressure from, the whole Jair situation, which has been talked about forever, so you don't get to pick that one. Cornerback depth chart, or just what Jordan Love becomes in 2025. And is this like the year where we actually find out who he truly is?
I guess Love is a pretty big one, right?
So that was my number one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Bullard is really interesting too. LVN, just like how a lot of these young draft picks, high draft picks kind of fit into the overall puzzle. I guess this is the general theme, but yeah, I mean, Jordan Love. Yeah. That would be a, if you want to throw 50 touchdowns, dude, go for it. I'm not going to stop you.
Yeah, I'm very interested. I was talking to Pete Doherty for the Day Radio show, and he mentioned that Mike Holmgren was a huge believer that your third year as a starter is when you can really tell. And you kind of saw Aaron won the Super Bowl his third year as a starter. Brett was really starting to kind of break out as well in his third year as a starter. Again, it's different for everybody, but I do think we saw a very intriguing first year. Second year, had all the injury situations that he went through. And I do feel like this is really going to be sort of the tone setter for what Jordan is for probably the majority of the remainder of his career. Not to say he can't get worse or better a little bit here or there, but it feels like this is kind of the floor setter, the tone setter for who he kind of is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it'll probably decide how aggressive the team wants to be salary cap wise.
Agreed.
I mean, that's one of the biggest things in the NFL right now is just, these guys are getting a lot of money and good for them. I mean, if everyone's getting a lot of money, it doesn't really impact it that much. But what really matters at the quarterback position and how teams structure around it is how much are we putting this on a credit card? Right. And I think those conversations start to pop up with Jordan Love where it's going to be, all right, he's X good. Is that good enough for us to, you know, mortgage the future? Right. Yeah. To kind of keep this window open and stuff like that. Cause again, the Packers are going to be over the salary cap in 2026.
Okay. I lied. I have one more question for you. Do you think with that in mind, knowing that this is sort of the season where you really gauge Jordan and decide he's the guy that can take us to the Super Bowl, or he's like a guy that we're going to have ideal conditions with in order to win with. If this is the deciding year, do you think there was some level of intent going into this draft / off season of going and getting guys like Matthew Golden, Savion Williams, Anthony Belton, and just putting as much stuff there to say, we're going to not have any question and we're going to make sure we have multiple wide receivers, like the tight ends that we need, the offensive line that we need, the running game that we need. We're not leaving anything. We're going to find out this year if he's the guy that can completely lead us into the promised land. Or was it just, again, happenstance?
I think it's more happenstance because, again, I think Belton and Savion Williams are a little bit more like boomer bust kind of project type of guys. Like you're really betting on upside with those guys. I think maybe those conversations happen with Belton versus Amos in the second round, right? A pick that we've talked about a lot. But I think they turn that pick in for Golden every single time in that scenario. If one of the defensive tackles would have been available, maybe things are different. again, I think Hairston was in the mix there. So yeah, and you can even look at their visits, right? At this point, you know, their visits are
important,
tied to who they think is going to be available to them that they actually want to draft, right? And it's not a whole ton of wide receivers or offensive line. Like, they brought in the top receivers, but only one of them fell, and that was the one that they ended up taking. They brought in a lot of defensive tackles, a lot of edge defenders, a lot of cornerbacks, you know, high end in the draft, top 100 picks. So I don't think that was their mindset. I just think they took their players.
Yeah, I think so too. That's my take on it as well. Just more curious what you're thinking. Do you think the Panthers, when they see like Tet McMillan's visiting Green Bay, do you think they're just like laughing, being like, oh, that's cute that some team in the 23rd pick is, you know, having Tet McMillan visit when we're going to take him at number 8?
Yeah. But you know, I would have thought the Dallas Cowboys were laughing about Matthew Golden taking a visit to Green Bay too. So
very true.
If you would have asked me, I probably would have guessed. I don't know if I would have guessed Golden would have gone before Green Bay, but I would have thought that before Tet, but I would have thought there was a better chance Tet lasted to Green Bay than Golden, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes total sense.
You know, a lot of people thought Carolina was going to take the guy Atlanta ended up taking, the kid from Jalen Walker, the kid from Georgia. So I think that was probably one of the bigger misdirections, honestly, in the draft, because I think it was, if you knew people in the league, I think it was pretty chalk. I think I popped in on your stream right before the draft, and I was like, here's how the first 6 picks are going to go. You know, if Cleveland is picking at 5, it could be Mason Graham. The one thing I didn't think about was if Graham goes 5 and Genty's available at 6, what would the Raiders do?
Sure.
A lot of people knew that Kelvin Banks was a guy that they really liked. He could have gotten a lot earlier if, you know, that trade to 2 didn't happen. But yeah, I think the Carolina pick was probably not mocked correctly selection. One of the more not mocked correctly.
Did Carolina actually hold things close to the vest? Did they do something well organizationally? Like, this is a new league for them.
Yeah.
Well done, Carolina. Well done. Justice, what do you got cooking at Acme Packing Company?
Whatever I can get my hands on. I have a list of a couple of things that I want to write about.
You don't have people voting for the first round of 2026 draft yet?
Not yet. Not yet. I haven't touched the 2026 draft because
good for
people
you.
People can't even decide if Arch Manning is going to go number 1 or if he's even going to be in the draft class yet. So
yeah,
I leave that. I know my buddy Nate Tice for Yahoo Sports. He's not a guy who's just going to list guys for no damn reason. He actually watches tape on a lot of these guys. He probably was working on this the last month. Going into the draft, he dropped like a top, I can't remember if it was top 20 or top 25 prospects going into this season. So
it was 25.
I'm going to trust his word on that for now. I will say one thing I was bummed about when I have looked at 2026 mock drafts is I'm like, all right, where are the nose tackles at? And there's like one kid from Clemson who's apparently like a, you know, first overall pick type of talent.
That's Woods, right?
Yeah.
I've seen a little bit of him. He's fun.
And then that's it. That's it. That's all they got for the defensive tackles in the first round. So
great. Swell.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little worried about the spine of the defense, Andy.
I wonder if that's why these guys went a little bit earlier. Again, some of these teams like know a year ahead of like what's coming next. Yeah. And I wonder if they're like, hey, there's no defensive tackles coming out in 2026. So you should probably shop for them now. And a lot of teams did.
They sure did, man. Again, we're going to look back in some of the defensive tackles, particularly nose tackles who went, you know, day 2 really, and cornerbacks who went day 2 in this draft are going to be some of the bigger busts in this draft, just by like a volume perspective.
For sure.
The amount of overdrafts that happened usually don't, historically, that doesn't pan out well, right? So we're going to see some things where it's like, this 5'7 corner got picked on the top 100. He played 2 games in the NFL before he was cut. Like, some weird stuff's going to happen at these positions.
One of the things that's really hit me, even with, especially with like the Anthony Belton pick too, is like, it's never the fun thing to do, whether you're drafting a nose tackle where like Miami took, what's his face? Or again, where the Lions took Williams, like and these things are not like, they're probably like the fan base is like, what did they just do? And Anthony Belton in the second round for Green Bay, these big physical, you know, kind of dancing bear type of guys that you just can't find very many humans that do that. When you have the chance to take them, a lot of times you have to do it. And it just, I'm sure that there's a part of even NFL general managers of like feeling like they're taking their medicine of like, there's so many other really fun players out there that I would love to be selecting right now, like a Trey Amos, for example. But if we don't get this guy, like we might not have another chance to get somebody like this. And it's just always, I think, going to be like that. And I think there's a lot of draft classes where fans of teams were probably not super happy with where some of these, like Alfred Collins in the second round. If I'm a team that took Alfred Collins in the second round, I'm like, oh, that's just really not fun. I get it. I understand it, but that's really not fun. But again, you almost have to do it or you're just missing out on these guys entirely.
Again, football boils down to a block and a tackling, right? Yeah. And if you can run for 4 yards of play, you're going to run. Every coach in the country is going to say,
keep running.
We're just going to run for 4 yards of play. And maybe that's not sexy, but
it works. Yeah,
it works and teams will do it. So ultimately you have to, you know, offensively strive for trying to get 4 yards of carry and defensively try to stop the run. And then everything else gets built off of that ancillarily. So
I'm going to get you out of here before I think of 1,000 more questions that I want to ask you. Justice, you're incredible. I cannot thank you enough. Go follow him at Acme Packing Company, of course, on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL and, of course, the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Justice and I. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.